Hello, and welcome to episode 10 of the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. Welcome, fans, one and all, with emphasis on the one part, of course. Here I am again in front of my mic in my studio, hoping that I'm not talking to myself, even though I technically am right now. I'm your host, Ray Tempesta, and you'll be disappointed to know that I've not undergone a personality transplant following the first 9 episodes. For first-time listeners, the way the podcast works is that I introduce myself, so you can cross that one off your bingo cards, then it splits off into 3 separate parts. The first part is where I let you know what I've been up to recently, theatre-wise, that is. As much as my general glamorous existence would make much more interesting content, that's not the theme of the podcast. Usually, it's a review of a show I've watched recently, with the occasional other interesting tidbits, and I use the term interesting loosely. The second part is the best part, because my voice gets a rest as I interview a guest, and believe you me, in this episode, I really don't do much of the talking. Then the final part is me realising I've spent too much time on the other 2 sections and quickly rushing through reading out the details of some upcoming shows and auditions. Now that's all coming up, but first, here's some moderately exciting news. I've launched a website. Now this is good for 2 reasons. Firstly, it means all of my podcasts, reviews and social media shout-outs are all in one place, and there's a nice easy place to approach me about being involved in future episodes. It also means I get to read out the web address in every episode, which I am incapable of doing without making it sound like a cheesy radio advert. So, what's the address, I hear you cry when I'm nowhere near you and long after I've recorded this? Well, it's eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. See, I told you. Now, do check it out. Feel free to comment on things, laugh at my stupid face, even share it if you're really feeling in a generous mood. I've also got a Facebook, Twitter and Instagram account, which you can obviously follow, like and share. Right, now, that's taken care of. What have I been up to theatre-wise recently? Well, I went to go and see Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, at the Playhouse in Norwich, as performed by Sound Ideas Theatre. And for what it's worth, here's what I thought. Now, I feel it's only fair to preface the review by saying that it wasn't really my sort of show. As a jukebox musical, the show is really reliant on audiences having an affection with the songs, and for the most part in Priscilla, there wasn't really any songs in it that I was particularly keen on. That's nothing to do with the show, though. That's down to my taste, and if it had been a jukebox musical for 80s synthpop classics, for example, or heavy metal even, I'd have likely been raving about it, so I'm certainly not going to judge the show based on my taste in music. But let's start with the performance itself, though. And there was loads to enjoy. The 3 divas, played by Emily Sidnell, Holly Graham and Tina Dalzell, provided some outstanding moments, vocally in particular. The 3 leads, portrayed by Matt Squance, Alex Green and Christopher Nickel, were also excellent at both lip-syncing and singing, and Alex in particular looked really at home with the energetic dance routines. The chemistry between the 3 of them was joyful as well, and they particularly excelled in the more comical moments. Speaking of comical, Samantha Knight put in a hilarious cameo as Shirley. But she wasn't just there for laughs, though, and she proved her skill as a performer generally alongside the rest of the very talented ensemble, who never put a foot out of place. A particular highlight for me was the ensemble routine during the Communards' Don't Leave Me This Way, which was probably helped by the fact that it was actually one of the songs that I liked in the show. One minor criticism, and whether it was first night jitters, I don't know, but there was one particular cast member in the ensemble who remained rather stony-faced throughout, which was a bit confusing given that the show was generally quite joyous and a celebratory atmosphere, really. But perhaps he relaxed as the run went on. Beyond the performers, though, and the director, Dan Smith, aside from the general praise that he's due over the standard of the production, also deserves credit for extracting every ounce of comedy in the show. The production team did a fantastic job on what looked quite a complex setup. The only proper set piece was Priscilla, the bus, but what a set piece it was. It was a heavy truck which clearly took some effort to move, but it appeared to glide effortlessly around the stage when they were showing the inside or the outside of the vehicle, and what really impressed me is that they managed to rotate the bus with actors still on the stage, which took a high degree of accuracy not to knock into anyone in quite a tight space. They also made use of the roof of the bus as a performance space, which worked particularly well when the divas were performing in synchronisation with the artists on the floor. The lighting and various effects were spectacular, and the costumes and wigs were at times an absolute wonder to behold. As I said, it's unfair of me to judge it because it didn't match my taste in music, but I do feel the show suffers from a lack of substance. While it was very enjoyable, slick and well executed, the plot was just fluffy nonsense that barely skirted around the issue of tolerance and acceptance. I guess not every show has to have a strong message, and probably the more I think about it, I was taking it too seriously as a piece of theatre. What I would add, though, is that this production deserved to be on a bigger stage. Now, of course, there's nothing wrong with the Playhouse, but I think Sound Ideas would have benefited from the additional space, as some of the dance routines felt a little restricted. But in summary, if you're a fan of Gloria Gaynor, Donna Summer, Kylie, or all artists of a similar ilk, then this was absolutely the show for you. Even someone with as cold a heart as I have genuinely had to hold myself back from singing along at times. So if you're not a grumpy old man like me, well, you'll have had a great time. If you want to see these wonderful words in written form, you can check out the reviews page on my website, epod.co.uk. But now for the main feature. And I'd like to introduce you all to a handful of cast members of the Norwich Players, the in-house group at the Madamarket Theatre. We've got Rebecca, Lizzie, Charlotte and Tom, and they are set to perform The Three Musketeers in a matter of days. But before I introduce you properly, though, I should point out that this interview was a bit of an experiment for me, as I'd not done an in-person interview with more than one person before. We were also in quite an echoey space and were rudely interrupted by a flock of seagulls. Not the 80s band, just to clarify for older listeners, but an actual flock of seagulls on the roof of the Banner Market. I guess what I'm saying is the audio is by no means perfect on this one, so please do forgive the imperfections. Anyway, without further ado, which is a shame because I do so enjoy an ado, here is an interview with the cast of The Three Musketeers. Hello, assorted members of the Three Musketeers. Mostly to ensure everyone knows who's speaking, but also because my memory is dreadful. Would you mind each introducing yourselves and the role that you're playing in the show?
I'm Charlotte and I'm playing Milady.
I'm Lizzie and I'm playing Constance.
I'm Rebecca and I play the Queen.
I'm Tom and I'm playing Athos and Duke of Buckingham.
Oh, I didn't realise you were playing two roles.
Two roles, yes, split personality.
Now, the Three Musketeers is such a well-known and much-loved tale. Presumably, that's what attracted you all to be involved in the show?
I mean, honestly, for me, it was just the chance to be in the theatre at all. It's a plus that the Three Musketeers is a cool story, but I had been volunteering here for a while anyway in other roles, and then the casting call came out, and I didn't even look what it was. I thought, casting call, I'm there. Yeah,
you know, I'm a fan of all the films as well, especially the 1970s one. But when you first read the script, it just flowed. It was so energised. It was such a fun script. It was just a no-brainer, I think, to go for it.
I laughed a lot, which I don't normally get when I read like an extract from a script, because we didn't necessarily need the whole script for the audition, although we had access to it, didn't we? And I found myself reading through it before I came in, and I was actually laughing, and I was like, ah, this is different. This doesn't always happen. So it was quite nice. And I was like, actually, it must be quite fun to play with if you're actually laughing when you're reading it, because it doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
And the thing is, with an ensemble cast, of course, you don't always necessarily end up with a part that you perhaps envisioned yourself in. Did you all end up with the part that you auditioned for?
No.
That's a good question. Who do you go for?
I came in for Constance and Milady. I would have been happy to play any of them because they're all sort of similar for the women, apart from Milady, who has a bit more. But I didn't come in for the Queen. I read for the other two, and then Claire, the director, at the end was like, would you read this? Yeah. And I hadn't even read that bit before. So
I think I remember.
I think Claire, the director, fell in love with your voice.
You have a lovely voice.
I auditioned for Constance, and I got a call back for Constance, and then I wasn't originally Constance, but now I am. So it was a journey from sort of being like, oh, I'll come and see that later because I had friends in the cast. And then it was like, oh, wait, no, we'd like you back for cast change reasons because the original Constance was no longer able to be in the production. I was like, yes, I will absolutely come and join in.
And we're so glad you did.
Yay.
I read for Milady and Milady and have lived Milady for the last 8 weeks and I love her with my whole heart, so I'm very, very happy about it.
So I think everybody wants to play Milady. It's such an amazing such an amazing part.
Yourself?
Yeah.
You'd be a great Milady.
Athos and Judah Buckingham, I'm having to sort of make them as different as possible, which is a bit tricky, but they're all great roles.
And how has the rehearsal process been?
exhausting. I don't know about you guys, but
I was going to say, I'd assume for some of you, it's probably been quite physically demanding.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I drive out from the sea, from Sheringham. So I also get back about 11:30, 12, and I'm quite a sleeper. That's one of the things I found hard. But also just, I don't know whether it's my getting hit in the head too much. I've really struggled, as some of you know, with just learning the lines, but also just the sword fighting. It's relatively simple, but I've just... So that's been a challenge for me, but...
I feel like it crept up on us as well. Like, when we first started rehearsing, we had, like, spare time at the end of the rehearsals.
We all went for drinks, didn't we?
There was, like, set tasks for each... sort of rehearsal, we want to achieve this and this, when we want to achieve this and this, and we were doing that, weren't we? So we had like spare time at the end, and then in the last like 2-3 weeks we've suddenly been like, oh my gosh,
there's
loads to do. And it's sort of crept up on us because now it's suddenly like you have to be off book, you have to have the stage combat down, and suddenly we had to do it all because we open next week, and it's a bit like, oh. So yeah, I am also exhausted. Happy but exhausted.
Yeah, they've been exhausting because of course we've had to learn all the fight choreography and people have had to learn to dance and all this stuff, but it's also just been really nice to get to know everyone. And like I feel like everyone's grown a lot closer over the rehearsal period. And it makes everything so much easier when you're just having little in jokes on stage, and
because the Madam Market rehearsal process is quite intense, isn't it, over a relatively short period of time compared to
beginning of May we started, and we're up on the beginning of July, so 2 months, like 8 weeks or so.
You've got quite the ensemble cast here. This might be a slightly awkward question, but have you got a favourite character, excluding your own, because no doubt you've all got an affection towards your own characters?
Everyone who comes watch, look out for the first scene of the second act.
The hostess
is majestic.
Incredible.
She's so good.
Hilarious.
Accents extraordinary.
She's amazing. So that, I think that is my favourite, and just watching her. But I don't know if that's the character or if it's the actor making it so good.
Probably a bit of
both. Might be a bit of that, yeah. The actor in particular, she's so good.
She's incredible. And she just brought them out of nowhere, didn't she? Like, one day we were just like running through the lines, and then the next week we had three different, like,
three new characters
that were similar but not the same, and completely, it was great.
I've got a very cliche answer. I love loads of different characters for different reasons. Like, all of the Musketeers have different... like personality traits that just work so well. And then, like you said, the hostess.
I have two, I think. I had one, and now I have two, but for different reasons. So my first one was going to be D'Artagnan, because I feel that D'Artagnan is the product that Milady could have been if Milady hadn't been through everything she had.
Mm.
I feel they started out very similarly, but D'Artagnan was given a different pathway, whereas Milady had to fight for herself. And I feel that a lot of people, their automatic assumption for Milady is she's just evil. And actually, I don't think she is. I think she's very, very damaged. And she's a product of her life and her environment. Whereas D'Artagnan started out very similarly, but was given a different path. And so is on this sort of majestic and loyal and sort of
hero journey,
which could have been Milady if she was an orphan, the same as D'Artagnan, before she got the guidance that D'Artagnan got, she was alone, and that's what led to her going down the path that she went down. But I also love Porthos, but I think that's because I love Bradley's Porthos.
Yes.
Anyone who comes to watch the show, listen for the laugh.
It's so infectious.
It is hysterical. And the first time he did it, we were just in stitches. And it's just a character thing that he's got. But I love Porthos because he's funny. Bradley is just funny. Yes. So yeah, I think both of them, but for very different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone here get to do any sword fighting?
Yes.
All of us.
You all do? Oh.
I think every member of the cast sword fights.
How have you found it?
It's been
hard. Yeah, it's very hard. Yeah.
Very exciting.
Every time someone asks me about the play and why I'm enjoying it, I'm like, I'm just here to whack people with swords. But you're not actually meant to do that.
Yes.
Don't whack anyone. We've had the choreographer in who sort of set it, but then he left a few weeks, didn't leave, but left us to it a few weeks ago, and then it went a little downhill.
We had a bit of absence, and then loads of time passed, and we hadn't run certain fights in like 3 weeks. We had a heck of a time, didn't we?
Yeah,
we had a real time, because we'd just not been in together. So we had to go back and start over, and we've got a really long sequence as well.
I think it's also fascinating. I think Milady and Athos, it's such a combustible, it's such a fragile, ferociously painful relationship. I don't know about you, but I think it's put a different dynamic for everything that we do. So when we fight, Athos is beside himself with fury, And then because I was forgetting the moves, it was complex. And it's almost taken us two, on a sort of a different emotional journey. Which hopefully will add to the performance.
Yeah,
hopefully.
No, definitely.
Because you can probably hate me now.
Okay. No, it's just like at the end you see as well, from the sword fighting into not, there's a nice scene with some sword fighting in the very end of the play. I'm not going to say anything more, but Athos and Milady actually go from sword fighting to it getting so emotional that the swords go down. Yeah.
And then it's explained a little bit as well why
there's this emotional like turmoil between them. You know earlier on what's happened between them, but you don't find out why she is hurting so much until the very, very end. Yeah. And if we can get it right, it's a really good moment. So, fingers crossed. Mm.
Athos, Porthos, and Aramis. Which is the best of those musketeers?
I'd say Aramis.
They're all very conflicted. I think Aramis seems to be the one who stays on the most straight and narrow path.
Yes.
Is the most honourable to the code. Porthos is the most larger than life. He's almost indestructible. He's a bit like Kung Fu Panda. And then Athos is just a wreck. He's literally a step away from physical, spiritual, mental breakdown. And
I feel like Athos, if he had his self together, would be the best musketeer. But I feel like because he is so all over the place and because he's so damaged and so like broken, he doesn't have the self-control to be that musketeer. Yeah. Whereas Aramis shows himself at points to be like a good fighter, to win things that others don't, to, you know, he is very consistent.
Yes, he's the best throughout. At being a musketeer.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that had they all got themselves together properly, Athos would be the best, but he's just the wagon a little.
I'll reposition the question in a slightly more infantile manner. Who would win in a fight?
I think Aramis. Still Aramis, yeah, because Athos is a state and Porthos is probably drunk.
I tell you,
Athos fights bigger.
Yeah.
Aramis fights smarter.
Have you seen Lord of the Rings, the first one, The Fellowship of the Ring?
I've seen them all.
Yeah. I'm a massive fan as well. The head of the Uruk-hai, when he's fighting Aragorn, I think this is Athos. I think Athos, if he was impaled, would pull himself up the sword to get at whatever it is that he was feeling hate towards. Because his greatest hate is self-hate. So I think, skill-wise, Aramis. I think probably bouncing off walls and winning somehow would be Porthos. But then I think the more Athos would just... He's so lost, he wouldn't care about dying. So he would win. He would win as he died.
Yeah. He'd throw himself under the bus, definitely. Because he's just driven on raw emotion.
Moving on to your own experiences in the theatre outside of this show, can any of you pinpoint something a moment that ignited your passion for the theatre, or how did you get your start?
Gosh, that's a question.
I have an exact answer to it. It is The Phantom of the Opera, which my parents took me to multiple times as a child. It was like the show that we watched in the theatre. And then on the way home would listen to the soundtrack and sing along. And even though I did not become a musical actor because I can sing.
We're going to find that out one of our nights out.
Karaoke. But that just sort of that the world of the theater from that point on. I mean, you can just tell when you walk into the theater, there's a different world in there. And that world, whenever we went to Phantom of the Opera, I was like, this is it. Yeah. And so when I was a child, I was like, I'm either going to be an actor or an acrobat. And I ended up being an actor.
There is something about stages. I think even coming into the Madam Market for the first time, I thought to myself, I don't care if you're not an actor. You step onto that stage and it makes you feel dramatic. Yes. It makes you feel expansive. And just, for me, it was more the movies. I, as a young boy, mum and dad divorced at 7, and a new boyfriend of my mother's was driving me back to school or something. And he told me, just in the car, the story of Rocky. And I then watched it. And so for me, the movies is always something that I always wanted to be in.
My grandmother was an actress, and she's always been very theatrical in the way she even just tells stories at the dinner table. And so I think that's where I got my love for it. And it's sort of, theatre's been part of my life literally from when I was very, very small. I did dance and I've done Lando and things like that. And I'm studying drama at university. But I think the moment that I went, this is absolutely what I want to do, were two productions that I did very, very close together. One was being Mrs. Lovett in Sweeney Todd, and just, it's such a fun role, and you get to do so much, and I love singing. It was like just a whole experience wrapped up in one. And the other was I had written a play It had taken me 2 years, and I got the chance to stage a rehearsed reading of it at my school. And I picked the actors for it, and we just did one performance. But sitting at the side of the stage, watching all of my friends acting out what I'd written, seeing the audience reaction, it just sort of ignited so much joy in me to be able to make people laugh or make people cry with what I've written. So that's the moment that I was like, yes, this is what I want to do.
Do you know what? I don't have a specific moment because I've done it for as long as I can remember. Mm. I joined up with like Stagecoach when I was like 4, okay. Younger than I can even kind of remember how old I was. And I did that for a couple of years because the theatre world didn't take you until you were 7 or 8. So I did that for a couple of years. And then I went from there into the Norwich Theatre Royal Arts course. And I was there from 7 or 8 through until when I was 16, when I then joined the youth theatre. So I did the summer shows with them every single year and then went on to the youth theatre, did some things with them, got my first big role over at the Theatre Royal and got like mic'd and everything. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. And then just kind of went from there. And then I went and trained at Italia Conti. I remember being on the stage and having all the lights and stuff and that warmth that you get from being on there. I remember just loving that, putting on shows at home. And then I remember when I was at school, they did this thing in our form when I was in sort of like, I think it was like year 11, where like, what do you want to do with your life? You need to have lots of options. And I went, no, I don't. And they said, no, yes, you do. You have to do, they wanted us to do like a mind map where we do lots of, and I went, no, but I'm going to City College to do musical theatre. And they went, but what if you don't get in? I went, well, I will. And they went, but what if you, I went, no, I'm going to. I was always very like streamlined, like this is what I want to do. I know that I want to do it. I've done it for as long as I can remember. And I'm not discussing it. Like that's just, and I've always done it and I've always loved it. And I did go to City College and I did do musical theatre and then I did go on to do drama. And yeah, I don't have a specific moment. It's just who I am, I think. I think without it, I'd be a bit broken. And when I've had breaks, I've said to you, haven't I, had a stint for the last 2-3 years where I didn't do anything and I lost a part of myself completely. Yeah. And I've found that being back in the theatre. So I just think it's a part of who I am.
I think we've all sort of had a similar thing during lockdown where we've all haven't been able, like in the very beginning of lockdown, I did a bachelor's in acting in Cornwall and with some people there, we formed a theatre company and then lockdown started. And we were like, okay, so no theatre then, okay. But we did an online reading of the importance of being earnest to raise money for acting for others. And that was the only acting that I did in those, 3 years now. And I was completely the same. I was like, who am I anymore? Yeah. What am I doing?
And you don't realise that part of you is necessarily missing until you get back in the theatre. And then you're like, oh, there she is.
And, and I can still do this. It still works.
And it's still part of me. And it just reignites as soon as you get back in, definitely. Yeah.
And it's the magic of the stage, I think.
Definitely. And also just the magic of coming. I think being a part of a cast is different to being a part of any other group that you could be a part of, because you just have to come together in a way that no one else does. And as an actor, your emotions are always on the surface because you've got to be able to draw on them all the time, which means you're an emotional bunch of hooligans running around the space doing good, but it works. And I think you just become so close so quickly. It becomes like a family for the time. Like, we spend all our time together at the moment. See each other like every day, but even on days when we're not rehearsing, we still see each other. But it's lovely. It's created bonds that will then last a lifetime.
If you could choose to be any show, obviously this one's been amazing, which one would you choose? Or tell you what, how about, what has been your favourite show that you've been in so far? You can answer it in two parts if you like.
I have an answer to that, which is that, so during this bachelor's, when we formed this company, we didn't feel like our talents were being showcased enough during just uni. So some of us got together to put on a show outside of it, next to the show that we were doing in uni. And that was Titus Andronicus by Shakespeare. And we sort of went through it, cut it down to be a bit more digestible. And it's the best show I've ever been in. We really went for it. We took one of the black boxes at, which is just one of the studios that they make completely black in like art schools or drama schools. And we covered the whole thing in cardboard and just used all the blood because it's a very gory play. And we went for the gore and it was just the most fun, very stressful because we had to do everything off our own backs, but it was the most fun, amazing thing that I've been in.
So I was in a play, 2017, I think. And it was actually written by a friend of mine, Heather Kelly, who's a local like actor, performer, playwright, etc. And she was at the Theatre Royal with me, and a group of us got together and she wrote a production, a play called Freshers. And we had to do it all ourselves. So that's what like sparked it. But it was such an incredible process from beginning to end. Like she wrote that from nothing, and she wrote it because the rights to the play we wanted to perform were a bit too expensive. So we decided to go down a different route. And it was incredible. And there was a group of us that were really good friends, and we did a preview night over at Stage 2. And then we took it to Fringe for a week. And took it to Fringe, and we like, had to market it. We had to get our space in a studio together. We had to get a lighting technician in. We had to do everything ourselves, provide the props, everything. But it was an incredible experience because it was completely organic from beginning to end. And again, we were also close. We were staying in like a hostel room with like bunk beds, and like it was just a brilliant experience. And the play was fantastic. She's a brilliant playwright, and it was exciting. It was fun, and it was silly, and it was it was a really, really brilliant experience. So I would say of everything I've done, that would be my favourite, because it wasn't just the acting; it was everything from start to finish.
I would say that my favourite role that I've been in so far has been Mrs. Lovett in Sweeney Todd, and mostly because it's just such a darkly funny musical. Like, it's about a barber killing many, many people and someone else turning them into pies. It was so much fun because I've always loved those songs. I've loved Sondheim. And my best friend at the time was playing Sweeney. So we were just bouncing off each other for the whole time. And A Little Priest will always be one of my favourite songs. I got to jump up on a table. I got to basically just run chasing him around the space. And the reaction every night from the audience was fantastic. And when I get to die at the end, very, very dramatic death. I got to like slam the doors of the oven while screaming. And everyone was like, oh my goodness, is she okay?
She actually stuck.
She actually stuck. Apparently one of when my parents were watching it, one of the other audience members leaned over and went, is your daughter actually Cockney? And I was like, I take that as a compliment. So that's my favourite role.
Yeah, so I think all the roles, productions are special in their own way. But for me, it was about May of last year is when I finally sort of plucked up courage to sort of do this more seriously. And I was going to a film to do a short bit of filming in London. I was on a road trip with my daughters, so any time with my daughters is always good. So it was more just this experience of turning up on this proper big movie film set for a small part, and then hearing that one of the actors hadn't turned up. The director came up and said, you look dressed in the sort of right sort of way. Do you want to do this scene with the main actress? You got 20 minutes to learn. So my daughter, Delilah, helped me, and then I had makeup put on. And it was just this beautiful moment, like, because for me, I feel like this is just like kids' play. And I keep on pinching myself, thinking, this is such fun. And finally, we're doing it for real. But like I said, I think everything here, this is special because of the script, because there's some extremely good actors, but also with some extremely interesting people. So this is a pretty intense experience.
And I think that is really cool. But also, I really connected on what you said. To me, a production is particularly special when you're not just an actor in it, but you're, because also as an actor, it's very rare that you get to only be an actor. You can't really live off that. You have to, if you're going to do it, you have to sort of multi-role. And so to be in a production where it's sort of your baby rather than you just waiting by the phone and then coming in like, okay, I will play this role and then go home. It just makes it much more stressful, but also so much more fun and so much more, this is our thing.
Yeah.
So no one's answered the question about the dream show.
Oh, boy.
Anyone?
She was mentioning Shakespeare. So I think Iago in Othello. I'd love to play that role.
Brief answer. It's good.
So if there are so many that I'd love to play, one of which being Lysander in Midsummer Night's Dream, because I got to do a scene from that recently, and it was just so fun to be a himbo. But there's a show called Present Laughter, which there's a character in it called Liz, and she's the ex-wife of Gary, and she's just so funny, so witty, and she's just having none of his tantrums. She's been through it all, and she's just watching him. I just think she's excellent. She's great.
Okay.
I'm amazed. I'm looking at you thinking, surely you've got something to say.
And I've got two. But so no, very simply, Viola in 12th Night, just because ironically, based on what we're doing, what she does is quite interesting. But I just think she's quite a powerful character. And also I like her playfulness and her innocence, but also determination. So I like that character a lot. Mm-hmm. But also, I would love to play Elphaba. I love singing, and the key change at the end of Act One is incredible. So I would love to play Elphaba, paint myself green, and get lifted up in the sky. That would be great.
I only have like very sort of maybe douchey answers, which are that it's, I have two plays in mind which are unwritten yet that I would like to be in. One of them is one of my friends within this theatre company who's an amazing writer, and we've already done one of his plays that he wrote called The Pyre. That was great. And he's currently writing another one, which hopefully when we're all back in it, we can get it done. And that is sort of a apocalyptic, futuristic thing using virtual reality, but talking about the people around it rather than in the VR, looking at the people who work around it. And it's just a really harrowing story, and it's amazing. And then I am writing another story, which is about a witch hunt. It's masked as a witch hunt, but really it's just my ramblings as a feminist is what it actually is. So it's sort of sending the audience on what they think is a fun, let's go find the witch. And by the end, they are killing a bunch of women because of herd, you know, not herd immunity. It's not that.
It's not COVID.
Mob mentality.
Yeah.
And there's hopefully they come away thinking, maybe we should treat women better. So those two plays, but they're not, I don't exist yet. They don't exist yet. They're half exist.
That's fine. It's not a douchey answer. I'll just edit it out. It's fine. Finally, this is a douchey question. Why should everyone come and see it?
I would say because it's just an action-packed adventure. Yeah. It's got everything. It's got thrills. It's got some really touching moments. A lot of sword fighting.
Ditto. Yeah, it has all of the emotions you want to feel. Hopefully, if we do it right, you'll feel them. Mm. You'll laugh, you'll cry, hopefully.
I hope so. That's my aim.
God, I'm scared now.
I feel like as well, it's on top of all of that, which I agree with completely. I feel like it's making a point, but it's doing it with comedy and laughter. I feel like there is an element of feminism. Yes, that kind of level of discrimination may not be actively present in today's society, but it's there at times, unfortunately. Mm. But I think that it's doing a really nice job of making light of the play, but also kind of giving a little nudge in mm-hmm. that direction, like a little nod in that direction. And I just love the comedy of it. Like, it's a serious story, and what happens is very serious. Like, from beginning to end, there's lots of quite dark things going on and have happened and get referenced. But it never feels, you know how sometimes people talk about they've done a dark production or something and it took them to a really dark place and it took them where the play went. I think there's enough lightheartedness and enough comedy and there's some really funny moments. And I mean, just wait for the Musketeers to go galloping. That is beautiful. So yeah, I would say the comedy element really gets me.
I think that just about wraps things up. So I'll say goodbye in a rather awkward fashion, and I'll probably leave that bit in.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So there we have it. Weren't they a lovely group? Now, I had to cut out quite a bit of the interview as, well, I'll let Charlotte explain.
Talk for England, me.
There was also a completely bonkers story of one of Tom's dreams, which I cut out, but I would encourage you to ask him about it if you see him after the show. I also do have to thank them for creating a laughter track for me, so I can now have an appreciative audience every time I make a dad joke. Anyway, what did you think, Charlotte?
I laughed a lot.
And what about you, Tom?
I stopped enjoying it.
Seamless editing. And to complete the promo work for the show, The Three Musketeers is on from the 12th to the 16th of July at the Madder Market in Norwich. Tickets can be purchased from maddermarket.co.uk. Now, what else is coming up in the region in the next few weeks? Well, over in Suffolk, the Bury St Edmunds Operatic and Dramatic Society are hosting an introduction and read-through evening on the 14th of July for their October production of Alan Ayckbourn's Neighbourhood Watch. It's hosted at the Unitarian Meeting House in Bury St Edmunds at 8 p.m. Over in Hofton, you can catch a couple of outdoor performances of The Taming of the Shrew at the Hofton Hall Estate. It's being performed by Drama Impact Theatre Company and is on twice on the 23rd of July at 5:30 and 8:30 p.m. Thetford players have an information evening ahead of their pantomime, Puss in Boots. It takes place on the 25th of July at the Terrapin in Thetford at 7 p.m. with auditions to follow in early August. And finally, the Gallery Players in Ipswich are presenting their musical production of The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole at the Gallery Studio Theatre. It's based on the best-selling children's book by Sue Townsend, and it's set to be one of the first productions of the show since its West End debut in 2019. It's on from the 13th to the 23rd of July. As usual, I'll post links to the shows and auditions featured on their social media pages, and that's about all we've got time for. It just leaves me to say thanks for listening to me and the Three Musketeers cast ramble on, and I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, and go watch some theatre. All for one, and one for all.